Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things, we don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains, and it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves as we are women. We are also caregivers, and we are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join, and please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show, Alternative Medicine and Wellness. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Today we are going to be talking about a great subject, which many people have just recently, I think, depending on the area in which the country in which you live, might be new to you. We're going to be talking about shaman journeying. And what, you know, a shaman, you know, I live in New Orleans. We all know about shamans. We've known about shamans forever. They could be on the street corner. They could be down on the corner, you know. That's what they think. They are also in the back cultures and in the back areas of Louisiana, where it's really, they're really respected as healers and people who really help others in the area be able to keep themselves focused and keep them, you know, grounded. And they would always go for those big questions in their life, and when they really felt out of space, or as we would say, you know, just didn't feel right, they would go to these shamans in the back areas of Louisiana, and they would always be able to find some comfort and help. So what really is a shaman? Well, you know, I also lived in Arizona. There were a lot of healers there. But then I speak to a lot of people in different areas of the country, Oklahoma, Florida, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and they really have no clue what those words mean. So today my guest is Sandra Ingerman, and she is the expert. She's a licensed therapist and shamanic practitioner, and she's going to be talking to us about her new book, Walking in Light, The Everyday Empowerment of a Shamanic Light, because she will be able to tell us in her words what she feels a shaman is and what this journey is all about. Really, so many people now are starting to have what they're calling awakening, or they're having more information, or they're feeling more connected to nature, but there's still a lot of people that don't quite get that or don't understand that. But also there's some that do quite get it and they're super stuck. So I'll raise my hand on that one. So Sandra is here to just help us out and just talk about her new book. So welcome to the show, Sandra. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks, Jeanette. It's great to be back and be talking to you again. We had a fun show the last time.
Sure did. And, you know, and don't you think, as I said in the beginning, there's all different levels of what people know, think, and believe, and how we're all stuck. And as I've said, I've raised my hand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me try to just clear up a few things and help us get started. Shamanism is the oldest practice that's known to humankind. The word shaman itself is a Siberian word. It comes from the Tungus tribe in Siberia, and it means one who sees in the dark or healer. And the practice of shamanism itself dates back over 100,000 years. So all spiritual practices came out of shamanic tradition. And shamanism is a universal practice. So is practice in Siberia, all across Asia, Australia, Africa, parts of Europe, North and South America. And so, you know, what's happening in today's world is a lot of people are taking forms of working that are alternative ways of working or that come from certain native communities and put it into shamanism. But shamanism is a distinct spiritual practice. And a shaman is a man or woman who actually enters into an altered state of consciousness, typically by using some form of percussion like drums or rattles or bells or bowls or sticks. In Australia, they use the didgeridoo. And they go into an altered state of consciousness where the shaman leaves behind his or her ordinary concerns, thoughts, ego, personality, and travels into what we call the invisible realm. Some people call it non-ordinary reality. The Celtic people called it the other world. The Australian Aborigines call it the dream time. And the shaman enters into this invisible reality, which from a shamanic point of view in all cultures around the world is just as tangible as the world we live in here, but we've shut the veils between the worlds because of how we've been socialized in our culture in modern times to only recognize what we can see, feel, hear, touch, smell in this world. And so the shaman transcends this ordinary world that we call ordinary reality and enters into the invisible realms where the shaman can have access to what we call helping compassionate spirits who look down on the earth and have a different perspective than we can have through our human eyes because we're playing the game of life so we can't see around us. And the helping compassionate spirits can give us guidance and bring through healing. So in a shamanic culture, there was one, two, three shamans in a village who performed healing work and who were able to get guidance from these helping compassionate spirits for the people who lived in the community. But what is very important to note is that everybody who grew up in a shamanic culture was born with gifts, talents, and strengths. And those gifts, talents, and strengths were acknowledged at birth. And the community depended on them to share their gifts and talents and strengths to be able to add to the health of the entire community. And also everybody in a shamanic culture was taught from birth how to live a life of honor and respect for oneself, each other, nature, other living beings, and certain spiritual practices to engage in, such as working with the power of their thoughts, their words, their daydreams. So the reason I wrote Walking in Light was not to introduce people to how to become a shaman, because destiny calls you to be a shaman. But what were those practices that people learned when they were born into a shamanic culture to learn how to live a healthy life and to contribute to the health of the whole community?
Do you think, Sandra, you know, we say that a lot of our ancestors may have done that in the past. I know I am of Polish, Lithuanian, and Irish culture, and I can tell you for a fact that many of my ancestors would say, did you see that? Do you hear this? Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. So they've all had that. They just didn't live that life. But I think we may have, in other words, maybe several generations back, they may have had more practice, more, they may have been doing it more, it may have been more forefront in their life, and eventually over the generations, that, as you've said, the actions that we now do on earth kind of takes away from that. So in other words, it reduces your gifts and brings you back escalating into this world of what's going on here now. You know what I mean?
Well, so, I do share that because shamanism is over 100 years old, and it was a universal mm-hmm. practice that everybody who's alive today has ancestors who practice shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is as we moved into a technological culture, we started to rely on science and we moved away from the invisible realms. But we all have ancestors who relied on their intuition and made some contact with the invisible realms.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in a modern-day culture. Children do this all the time. You don't have to teach children the practice of shamanism. Mm-hmm. They're always in touch with the invisible realms. But that veil closes down as, you know, parents say, stop
right.
dreaming, pay attention. Teachers say, stop dreaming, pay attention. And everything becomes what you experience in the material world.
Yeah, I think a lot of times as we're parents, you know, it would when you go to school, they would say, prove it, show me, where is it? I have to hold it. Or that's not 100% by what my belief system is. And so it's a comparison of, you know, what they were taught or what they knew. And then if you have something different, it was sort of, no, you have to conform to what we're telling you. So that really doesn't leave any diversity. And, you know, the way you live your life, it really is you end up on this trail that the proven, you know, and what it's supposed to be.
Right. And basically what we're looking at as a culture now is people who lack passion and meaning for life, because it's almost
mm-hmm.
like we're living in this one size fits all. So
right.
we're taught how to conform, follow the rules, and this is how you get by. Don't stand out too much. Don't bring too much attention to yourself. There are only a certain amount of people who are very creative on the planet, and you're most likely not one of them, is what you were told at a young age. Definitely don't shine your light too brightly, because you're going to stand out too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happened is we've all pushed ourselves inward so much and have compromised so much to be able to be part of society and have given into our social conditioning. And so people really aren't happy right now. And people
right.
oftentimes look to the material world of collecting more material objects, things, money. If I'm more successful by collecting more in the material world, I'm going to be happy. And when you travel to indigenous cultures, when you look at the people there, oftentimes they have nothing in the material
mm-hmm.
world. But yet there's a joy and a light that's shining out of their eyes. And the reason for that is in indigenous cultures and in shamanic cultures, people are taught how to cultivate a really deep and rich inner garden and inner landscape, and they have a very beautiful and rich inner world and vibrant and radiant inner world. And when you have that within, your light and joy and peace just radiate through you. And it's not dependent on all the change that's going on around you in the outer world, or what you have in the material world, or what you don't have in the material world. It's who you are. It becomes you. And so in our culture, and many other authors and teachers have used this term, we're spiritually bankrupt. And
right.
that's reflected in the lack of light, the lack of joy, the lack of vibrancy that we see in people's eyes today. And more people are waking up to something isn't right here. So more and more
mm-hmm.
people are turning to alternatives like meditation. The resurgence of shamanism today is unbelievable. There are tens of thousands of people being drawn to the practice of shamanism from all different parts of the world today. People are looking for ways to improve the quality of their life and to live a life with greater passion and meaning and with greater joy, and ways to find peace in the crazy world that we're living in right now.
And I think I've noticed that a lot. I've even emailed you over the past several months that this author and that author and this practitioner and another physician, they all knew your name and mentioned it many times. So we do know that it is getting out there so much more in the world today, and people are saying, you know, oh, who is that, or what is that about? I'd like to find out more. Would you share your website with us? Because you have extensive information on your website and a lot of help.
Yeah, I have a website, Sandra Ingerman, Ingerman.com. And on that website, I like to make things readily available for people. So I wrote some articles, short articles on shamanism and my work that you could read. There are interviews such as yourself, Jeanette, who are posted on in the interview section. I have some YouTube videos that you can just watch, some YouTube videos of me talking about some shamanic work and how to use it in a modern day life. And I write a monthly column that I've been writing every single month for over 15 years now. I haven't missed a month, to keep people inspired, because so many people are moving into a place of despair right now by only looking towards what's happening in the outer world. But this is a real time of initiation. From a shamanic point of view, it's a time of initiation. Initiation is what we go through every time we make a change. And so the fabric of reality of the world that we're living is unraveling simply because it doesn't support the health and well-being of individuals, animals, plants, trees, other creatures, everything in what we call the web of life in shamanism. And it's not supporting the health of Earth, our planet that we live on. So things are unraveling right now. But from a shamanic point of view, everything is created by the thoughts and the words in our daydreams, so that an energy is created in the invisible realms. I'm a spinner. I spin fiber into yarn. So it's shamanic cultures. What shamans and people in shamanic cultures do is they spin from the invisible the energy of their thoughts, their words, their daydreams into the visible realms, which creates a healthy fabric of reality. So there are thousands of people around the world turning to spiritual practices where we all become visionaries together, and we all start to spin through and weave together a new fabric of reality that can replace what is unraveling before our very eyes. And so I try to, on my website, I try to list resources, and I write a monthly column to keep people inspired, to keep up their spiritual practices, because this is definitely not a time to lose hope.
And I think so, too. As time changes, movement escalates, things start falling, and new things start to branch forward. In other words, that cycle, it starts to get so fast. Sometimes people feel that they are like spun in the spokes, you know. They don't feel like they're going with it, you know. More like when you're spun in the spokes, you're kind of like chopped up. They really don't feel like they can keep up. And I think that, as you say in your book, though, sometimes that's where maybe some of those things in yourself just have to take on their own death. They have to go away, or and then new will come from it. And I have to tell you this, it was superiorly funny. I was standing in line yesterday at the clothing store, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to worry about the size on those shorts that I bought, you know, because I really like them. They're good. I'm not going to worry about it. And I got them. And I looked down at my legs and I said, oh, my gosh, you know. And I caught myself, and this is a simple example, but I said, you know, my legs aren't fat. They're just congested. They're just time to move on.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
So, yes. Yeah. So if you think of some of the words and some of the differences, you know, as you go on, isn't that so enlightening? And really what this whole book is about that transformation. That's the simplest way I could put your entire book was just take something where you are, realize it, acknowledge it. Is it a big deal? Is it not a big deal? And can you reframe it? And then move on to the next thing. And then it will fall away. That is an important, falls away. So I don't use the word fat. We use the word just congested, you know. And it is true, you know, being myself in the medical field, your legs, if they are like that, they're just congested. It just didn't get a chance to move out. When you think about it as energy, it just didn't get a chance to flow. Or when you think about it, you know, exercise, you didn't get a chance to move it. So, you know, it's really just thinking about things as, you know, you are speaking in your language and I speak in a different language sometimes, people can say, well, this might be how I see it. And then take it from there. I think it's really all about individuality, too, because as I've said to you with the book, it's like I just can't, I'm super stuck on this power animal. I mean, that was right in the beginning of the book. I just got myself so stuck, I couldn't get past it, had to put the book down. I said, forget it. I'm just going to read the book all the way through. And I got to the end and I said, okay, then maybe that just isn't for me. Maybe I need to just figure out something else for myself to move forward. And that's fine. So to the listeners,
well,
you know, there's diversity, right?
There's diversity. And one of the things I wanted to comment on about what you're saying about congestion is, yes, it is important for us to honor ourselves, love ourselves, and then to become embodied. A lot of what I wrote in Walking in Light is that it's time for us. So many people on the planet have become disembodied because of all the trauma that we've been through. And so that's one of the reasons that we're not really enjoying life, is we're kind of in and we're kind of out, and we're not really making a commitment to be fully in life. So sometimes, yes, you love yourself for being congested, but then you have to step back.
That's
and so right. What I write about in Walking in Light is step back and say, am I living a healthy life emotionally and physically?
Right.
And if not, if my body is not healthy and if my emotional life is not healthy, what are some simple changes that I can make?
Right.
And so where you got stuck was I did write the first chapter for people who wanted to explore the practice of shamanic journeying, of working in the old way of being able to travel into the invisible realms to meet up with helping spirits. But as you proceed with the reading, every exercise has an option. Either you can journey on this, or you can do a guided meditation, or you can take a walk in nature, or you can put on some music and just let yourself imagine, or you can write. So I think, again, with shamanism, what you see is with the resurgence of shamanism, and this is one of my frustrations in teaching right now because my workshops are so popular, is some people, again, they try to conform, oh, these are the instructions of how to practice the shamanic journeying, without realizing that there are thousands of shamanic cultures around the world, and every one of them journeys in a different way. But it's difficult for us in our culture to let ourselves break out of the box. We want to put ourselves in the box, and then sometimes the instructions don't make sense to us, where shamanism is all about empowering your capacity to get guidance for yourself and your capacity to create positive change in your own life and for the planet itself.
You know, and also, too, I find when people come to me and they say they're sick and they give you 30 minutes, you know, to be able to come up with a treatment that's going to have them not sick anymore. In other words, here's what I am, and I want you to take it away and give me the treatment or whatever so that it'll be gone within an hour, 2 hours, 24 hours. You know, and sometimes we look at the healthcare profession even, or at the spiritual professions, religion, meditation or exercise or nutrition or even the pharmaceuticals or even the practitioners, physicians, and we say, oh, but they're not fixing me. They're not healing me. It didn't work. They didn't work. They didn't this. They didn't that. And, you know, I found it was so profound when I just, I've been doing this for a while now, is just sit with them and listen to what they're saying. And when really it will come out is I'll end up with one sentence and it will say, oh, so why do you, what is it really you're looking for? You know, or what are you really asking me for? And a lot of times you have to go down that bantering back and forth and they'll get to the bottom line. It had nothing to do with what they came in with. It has to do with something else that has just been bothering them. For an example, like, you know, I've got a really bad headache. Well, maybe it's not your headache all the time. Maybe it's how did you get to that headache or what's really the root cause of that? And maybe looking at that to see where things are. And I think when you do a lot of this work in your book, you know, you will come back to that eventually to be able to, that will start to surface, in other words. If you start to clear away all the other hums and haws and buts and woulds and shoulds, it will slowly rise on its own what's more, you know, more important.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I teach in all my books and workshops and definitely in Walking in Light is that there's a difference between curing and healing. And so when we go to a shaman and a shaman does a whole ceremony first, gets out his or her drum or rattle and does what's called a power animal retrieval or soul retrieval or extraction work, the shaman is performing a cure. When you go to a doctor and you have chemotherapy for cancer, the chemo is providing a cure. If you go to an acupuncturist and an acupuncturist puts needles into your body, the acupuncturist is providing the cure. But the client's responsibility is to do the healing work. So in a shamanic culture, when a person from a shamanic community showed up to the shaman and the whole community got together because it was important for the whole community, for each person to heal because they depended on the strength of every individual, the shaman would prefer the curing ceremony, but then it was up to the client to look at what was out of harmony, not with guilt, just observe what was not in harmony that was actually causing the illness that need a cure. And now, how do you change your life in a positive way in order to make that cure long-term? So in psychology, when an issue is oftentimes cured, the client is terminated. Or after a patient goes to a doctor and has surgery or chemo or gets pills for their illness, a cure happens. But really what needs to happen in the medical profession is for the doctor to say, okay, now what changes do you need to make in your life that will keep you healthy, where you let go of destructive ways of living and ways of life that didn't serve your health, and how are you going to change that? And that's something that's always been inherent in shamanic work because, as I said, it was the responsibility of every client who went to a shaman to then vision quest or work with what's out of harmony in my life that caused this illness. And in our culture, we tend to just want the symptoms to be treated. It's like we all want the aspirin that makes the pain go away. And I'm one of those people, too. I'm not putting it on any listener here. We're all in the same boat here. We want that miraculous cure. But life doesn't work like that. We're the ones who are responsible for creating a healthy life for ourselves.
And also, too, to that point, you do speak in your book that, you know, we think sometimes some of these healers or these doctors or practitioners or whatever, that they are perfect in their life. They 100% always practice, have never been hurt, have never had any issues. And actually, in your book, you said, too, that, you know, they have great compassion because they have been, you know, some have been coming from a wounded healer position. And that's important to know, because sometimes when you go to people, you're talking to them and you know that they're just not listening. They're just not getting it. You know, so you're really not heard. So what is the point of even being there? But yet people say, well, maybe then I'll just have to jump on their boat and listen to what they're doing. And then they wonder why it didn't work. It's because they weren't heard in the first place, or they didn't get that message across.
Yeah, and in shamanism, people who are drawn to becoming a shaman, when it's their destiny, people don't choose being a shaman. It's not a profession like, oh, I think I'm going to go to school for this. It's something that the spirits choose you for. And when you're chosen for this, you're put through initiations in life where you experience a lot of loss and a lot of suffering. And also beautiful initiations where you also experience the oneness and unconditional love of the universe, and you get a broader perspective so that you can be a presence of love and light, which is healing in itself. And shamans are called the wounded healer because of these initiations where they do experience certain kinds of losses, and it's the wounded healer, whether you're a shaman, a doctor, a psychotherapist, and another alternative kind of practitioner, that always keeps you in a loving and compassionate space, because we know what it's like to go see a healthcare practitioner who's shut down, who's just looking at their notes and watching the clock, and get your point out, and here's a prescription, and you know you're not being held, you're not in the presence of a true healer. If you think about the old-time doctors who used to make house calls and in neighborhoods, I had one of those when I was growing up in Brooklyn, and I'm only 62 years old, and I remember those times when the doctor listened to you and talked to the entire family and was a family friend, and you knew you were heard, you knew you were being held, you know, in a presence of love. And that was part of where the healing came from, and that's where all healing comes from, is by being in the presence of love and light, and knowing that somebody who has compassion for you, instead of is just writing down a note, some notes in a file, and here's your bill, and our time is up, and you need to leave now, and here's your script. That's not healing. And so, you know, we are looking at, and people are searching for alternative practitioners. Now you see it all the time, because people want a compassionate healer. They want somebody to listen to them, and they want somebody who is actually going to address their needs. They're not just a business, but they're a person. And that's what I train, when I do train my practitioners for people who are gifted in performing shamanic healings, is this isn't a business. This is something that you're doing as a service. And that's really where we need to move back to in all of our healthcare organizations is, you know, that compassionate listener, because healing comes when clients are held in love.
That does make a huge difference. You know, so many times I also had a physician that always came to the house all the time, you know, on house calls. And I can remember they knew more about you than anything. They could just look at you and they had a sense. They knew what was going on. But now, you know, I know for myself, you know, being a naturopath, there are so many people that just keep that part of themselves that really is the healing for them. They keep that part at home. They don't bring it with them, you know. They don't bring with them their pain or their suffering or their deep issues and share that with other helping people that could really help them, like a physician or a therapist. They really keep that at home. They think that that's their, what you would call their deep, dark purse that they want to leave on the kitchen table, you know? They just don't want to bring that with them. And that really, if they would just take that with them one time to someone that they can compassionately trust, eventually I think that really would be the key to so much, a really good wave of healing in the world. And I think, let's talk a little bit about your journeying, when you say in here, where attention goes, energy goes. Because I think that's so important. If you say, I caught myself the other day, and I was saying something to someone, and they turned around, and they said to me, oh, I am so sick of all that positive crap that you dish out. And I'm going, oh, what did you just say? You know? And, you know, people sometimes are just like that sometimes, and some people just aren't in that space yet. And our words can really change, you know, the situation in the room or in people or in the way we live life.
Well, yeah, and I think that what that person said to you the other day is how a lot of people are feeling, and it's actually valid. And so I think that there's a real missing piece to some of the positive thought therapy that's out there right now, and it's something that I really address in my book, is the very first step is to acknowledge how you're feeling. Because to say things like, I shouldn't feel angry right now, I shouldn't feel in a place of despair right now, I shouldn't be fearful right now, that's not helpful, because that's actually how you're feeling. And so, you know, to read all this stuff of everybody be happy, just be happy. You know, it's not acknowledging. It's actually not honoring. It's dishonorable to how you're feeling at this moment. And so the first step is to express. In shamanism, there's a difference between, and this is a point that I write about a lot in the book, is there's a difference between expressing and sending. And so the very first step is to express. This is how I'm feeling right now. I have a right to my feeling. And then once you've expressed that, is to be able to say, I am angry right now. I am feeling fearful right now. But at the same time, I put my intention to transform the energy behind my anger and despair. So what I end up feeding myself is an energy of love and light, and that's what I'm sending out into the world. And that's a real distinction people make in shamanic cultures, because the invisible realm is so validated in shamanic cultures. The invisible realm is real. So if you send a real toxic thought out into the environment, from a shamanic point of view, you're sending it to yourself. You're sending it to your grandchild, who you love more than anything in the world. You're sending it to your favorite pet. You're sending it to your favorite tree. You're sending it everywhere. And so in our culture, one of the things that's creating illness is that we're eating a tremendous amount of poison. And it's not just from the chemicals that are in our environment. It's from our own inner state. And so we came here as human beings to express a whole range of emotions, from bliss to despair, depression, fear, anger. We came here to experience it all. So the first step is, what's your experience, and acknowledge that. And then to either find words that are blessing words or thoughts that rephrase and lead you to a positive outcome, or just imagine yourself saying, I am angry, I am fearful right now, and I imagine that the energy behind this emotion is being transformed into love and light that feed myself and every being I love and the planet with energy that will sustain us and keep us healthy.
And I think sometimes, too, simply, after that situation, the person came back and had said, you know, I realized when I said that, you know, and then they said that what was bothering them, and then they just, they transformed it for themselves. It was just, might have been that was the light that was shining on them, that was the direction, and it just, they noticed it, and then they changed it for themselves. And not everybody can do that. That's just a slight example.
Right. Well, we all have a power of self-reflection, and we all oftentimes lash out at somebody, and then we realize what we did. In shamanic cultures, as I shared, there were ways of life, there were understandings, because the invisible energies were acknowledged, and so people were taught at a very young age of how to use words as blessings. Where in our culture, we can bless people with our words, but we can also curse people with our words. We also do the same thing with our thoughts. You know, we say we want to live a peaceful life and live on a planet that's filled with peace. But if you examine the thoughts that loop throughout the day, are those thoughts leading to an outcome of peace? If you put a timer on and put a note to yourself, and when the timer rings and you notice what you're daydreaming about, because we all daydream,
right.
And in shamanic traditions, it's taught that we're always dreaming the world into being through our daydreams. And so if you stop yourself throughout the day and say, what am I daydreaming about right now? It really doesn't take a rocket scientist to connect what we're all daydreaming about in our daily life to look at the results of the world we're living in personally and globally right now.
Can you share a little bit about, in your book, you talk about unconditional love. Now, a lot of, and you describe about your situation with your father, and I know there's a lot of this going on right now. There's a lot of dementia and Alzheimer's. There's a lot of people who are passing too early. There's a lot of anger around progressing towards end of life or that sudden end of life. And a lot of people are really leaving themselves disheartened after that. I think I'm seeing it more and more and more.
Well, in shamanism, death is not a failure. Death is a transition. So in shamanic cultures, death was never seen as an end. It was where a person was going through an initiation, a transition into another form and time of life. Of course, the loved ones are left behind experiencing grief, and there were grief ceremonies and the understanding that grief is a process that can't be rushed. And so death was understood more on a very conscious level. And so with my own father, my father was, I was really lucky. My parents, I'm not saying I had the perfect childhood, but my parents really sacrificed themselves for me, and my parents really loved me, and I knew it. I was always a spiritual child, so I could always perceive the love of my parents, even if one of them was yelling or was angry. I felt the love because I was always perceiving the love behind that. And so I adored my parents, and I helped to take care of them the last 4 years of their life. And my father was suffering from dementia. He died when he was 97. And the last months of his life were very difficult because he became quite violent. And when he was violent, whoever he was acting out towards, whether it was me or a caregiver, you could actually see in his eyes that he wasn't looking at you. He was looking beyond you. And so it became very clear to me as a shamanic practitioner and a psychotherapist that my father was reliving a trauma from his life. And, you know, he was in the army, he grew up on the lower East Side in New York and was little, and that was 100 years ago, so you can only imagine how he was beat up and all of that. So it was very clear to me he was living out some kind of trauma, but I also couldn't, he understood anything anybody was saying to him, but in these times it was also very clear that you couldn't be rational with him either.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I decided to do was to take charge and to be the same daughter that my father was to me when I was growing up, because my father would do anything to protect me. He would do anything to protect me. And so I controlled his situation where the only people who were allowed into his room and into his space were people who would love him and would say that, I love you, Aaron. And, you know, I loved him and truly loved him and surrounded him in unconditional love. And so he did work through whatever it was. I don't know what, you know, again, we didn't talk about it on a rational level, but he died from a beautiful place of grace and ease. And it was a real teaching for me because I had three near-death experiences in my life where I went to a luminous being and experienced unconditional love, not personal love, not saying the words, I love you, but absorbing love into every single cell of my being that had nothing to do with the fact that I was Sandra Ingerman or personality and who I was in the world and what I did. It was just love. And I realized with my father that what a healing we can give people to not condone, like with terrorists or people who hurt other people, not condone their actions in the world, but at the same time, the understanding that many people on the planet today are working out a lot of traumas, and they're working this out on a very unconscious fashion, meaning they're not choosing to get help and work this out in a conscious way, but they're lashing out in a particular way, and we're seeing a lot of that with the huge amount of Alzheimer's and dementia. And I'm not the only person. There are thousands of stories about people who are making the same choice that I did of hold your parents in love. Just keep telling them how much you love them and letting that sink in and letting that be the healing force that it's been known to be for thousands and thousands of years is love heals. It's not techniques that heal. It's love that heals. And the other part of your statement of, yes, there are a lot of people who are choosing to leave very early right now. I've lost a lot of friends and students. And again, death is not a failure. From a shamanic point of view, healing can come from death in your life of needing to change the way you live, change your diet, your exercise, your job, the people who you're around, you know, because that whenever you get ill, in order to heal, you have to die. And some people are choosing to physically die. And it's the times we're living in right now. And we can help people die in a graceful, peaceful way of instead of trying to talk them into being here or denying the fact that they're dying, of just being a loving presence in their life.
Yeah, I think so many times that rescue method, you know, when someone has a diagnosis or whatever, sometimes they spend so much valuable time just looking at things that maybe just aren't in the best interest at that point. They just don't know that. And I think that's now, though, you know, as we've become a little bit more evolved or a little bit more aware, I guess you would say, many other people are saying it's going to be okay, and there are other ways. You know, the increase in hospice, I mean, even as rudimentary as some hospices are, it's still a step in the right direction, you know, just to keep making those steps in that direction.
Absolutely. I've trained a lot of hospice workers because mm-hmm. there's a lot of shamanic understanding about death, of how to be with right. people when they die, that can help them die feeling that they're not being held back, but they're being released, but they're also being loved, honored, and respected at the same time. And as we know, and you being a doctor know this, oftentimes mm-hmm. the way we treat death in this culture is we actually take away people's dignity. And it's yes. important to give them a dignified death. That's honoring people. But there's so many misunderstandings in this culture about death, and we fear death. And so it can be quite challenging.
And I think also, too, the fact that most of the time when it gets to that point, it's the people who are going to be left behind that simply try to take over the person's life at the end and rule and regulate how it's going to be, you know, mm-hmm. and they take away their free will and their choice when really that's all they have at that point. And to take that away is pretty much where we're seeing a lot of the confusion and anger and, you know, a lot of these setups. You see it in the media all the time, you know. Who's going to fight over who? And then the person is just sitting there, you know. It's like, really? You know, I don't get it, you know. I just don't understand it. And, you know, I've even had a woman I was working with, I had to keep getting there where it was that she was feeling, and she said she felt that her heart was broken and that she didn't want to leave the other person. And I said, well, why? And she said, oh, we just got a house, you know, this big car note, maybe she can't pay it. I said, if you're not here tomorrow, is it going to matter about that stuff? And she kind of mm-hmm. laughed, and she said, no, that sounds ridiculous. I said, okay then, mm-hmm. you know. And sometimes some people just need something simple to say.
Yeah.
Why am I stressing and holding on to all of this when I might want to just go, or I might just be able to live my life easier, or I might just be able to make better choices? Some of the stuff, do we have to wait till the end of life to make those decisions, or can we make them a little bit sooner, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think, you know, there's just so much fear about death in our culture. My mm-hmm. mother loved life. My mother was so in love with life. And she died at 98 and a half. I have two parents who lived a very long life.
Wow.
And she really believed that there was nothing. You know, you mm-hmm. died, you closed your eyes, and that was it. And I did, right. throughout my life, I shared with both my parents about how shamans believe in an afterlife and a good life, and they'll be met by loving relatives and be taken care of and met with love. You know, I did try to share that with them. My mother would say to me, well, you know, I really don't believe in these things. And so you can mm-hmm. only imagine, if you believe there's absolutely nothing when you close your mm-hmm. eyes. And I don't know if I'm right. I mean, nobody knows mm-hmm. all these theories about there's an afterlife. Who knows? Maybe my mother was yeah. right. But if you absolutely believe and you love life and you're holding on to life, that when you close mm-hmm. your eyes, this is it, then sometimes it's a little bit harder for people to let go. And for, you know, again, my mother died a very graceful death, and we sang to her the last few days. People came in and sang, and we talked to her, mm-hmm. and you know, she would smile even though she couldn't speak anymore, but she knew people were there. You know, what an incredible gift to sit with loved ones and to sing to them and just tell them that you love them and you're sorry if, you know, you fought at certain times of your life, but you just want to let them know that you wish them well and that you really love them and know that they're going to a place of peace. You know, just right there, mm-hmm. simple stuff are things that we can do that's so comforting that helps people to let go who are hanging on at the end of life.
Yes, and I think so, too. They just want to know that their life was worth it, or that you can celebrate
yes.
them. The one woman, she came out of the ICU at 2 o'clock in the morning, and by 4 o'clock in the morning, in the dark of night, they had a huge party with balloons and party hats and cake and everything to celebrate her while she was still there, and she passed at 6 in the morning. But that was what she wanted. She just had to feel that before she left, and that was wonderful for her. And, you know, we look at so many people. I mean, I passed the nursing home the other day, and you look at you know, the vacant of mind and spirit, and they're just sitting there just waiting for the body to fail. And mm-hmm. and you just, you know, I'm sure, you know, as we all do, you know, you feel that, you sense that, you know. I can drive down the street and just turn my head and I'll see stuff. I was going down yesterday down a road 40 miles an hour, for some reason turned my head to the right, and three blocks down on a side street, saw a woman in a wheelchair on the sidewalk, and I go, oh my gosh. And they're like, why do you see this stuff, you know?
Mm.
But we sense it, we know it, we can feel it, because, you know, it's just, it's present, you know? And I think that that's important,
yeah,
to be in tune with some things.
Yes, and I think that no matter how vacant somebody seems, because my,
mm-hmm.
my parents were in assisted living those 4 years, and I was there almost every day for those 4 years.
Yes.
And it really makes a difference, no matter how vacant,
yes,
somebody seems, to keep talking,
right,
to them. You know,
yes,
it's like talking to people who are in a coma, and you know all the stories of people,
mm-hmm,
who wake up from a coma and talk about how I heard about the conversation the doctor was having and all the nurses were,
right,
having and everybody. Yeah, it's the same thing with people who are,
yeah,
dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. They're hearing you. They absolutely positively hear you. No matter what their eyes are showing, you are speaking to their soul, and they hear you. And no matter how vacant somebody seems, you can give them a peaceful ending and a loving ending and bring healing into their life by singing to them and talking to them and holding their hand.
And, you know, Sandra, we're coming to the end, but I really think when we spoke this whole time, while your book has definitely a way in which you'd be able to follow a path, what we've also done through this whole conversation is we've really shown how someone can show and give out their light and their love and just how to be caring. We've just said it in some different ways and some different words. And I encourage, you know, the listeners to say, you know, as we talk, that's not the only way. I hear what you're saying. Transform it your own way and then find what that is for you. And really, that's what you and I are both trying to get across.
Right, because when you can, when you say that to another person, find your own way, you empower everybody and you acknowledge that we all do have our own way. And
mm-hmm.
that's what I kept trying to share in my book and in our
right.
conversation today, is there is no one way. It's
right.
about hearing and listening to what other people have to share and feeling inspired, and then using your imagination and your intuitive gifts to find your own way, because that's the destiny of your soul.
And that's sometimes such a big package to be able to find.
We're all in this together, though.
Goodness. And also, to mark that ending, it's not sometimes always that's the peak and that you stand up there and you're glorified either. It's
oh,
a process.
Yeah.
Okay.
You may think you're at the top.
You may think
yeah.
you're at the top or close to it, and you're like, I see it, I know it, and then it all of a sudden it goes away again.
Well, that's why shamans always say shamanism is a life path. It's someplace you never get to. And it's the same thing with life. We never get there, where it's all about a process and about riding the waves, because they're going to be those really smooth waves where you feel, ooh, okay, I got it. And then all of a sudden you're in the turbulent waves, and that's nature. And we are nature. So there's going to be the light and the dark. There's going to be the smooth times and the challenging times. And what spiritual practices can give us is a way to ride the waves instead of drowning in the more choppy, turbulent waves when they come around.
Right. Instead of being impaled by it, try to just flow with it.
Exactly, yes. And that's why people are turning to shamanic to spiritual practices, and that's why I teach shamanic practices, is to teach people how to ride the waves. It's all part of life. And
yeah.
It's a beautiful part of life. It's why we're here.
And you know what? And just in closing, I mean, we've probably all experienced those impalements. And we, you know, we're just better at dodging now. And I think that's, you know, just, hey, let that one go that way. I don't need to be on that road to be able to experience it again. I got it.
Right.
So, Sandra, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. Could you share again with
thanks.
The listeners some more about your contact information and your website? That would be great.
Yeah, just go to www.sandraengerman.com, I-N-G-E-R-M-A-N, and you will find a list of resources, contact information, and how to order my book, Walking in Light, The Everyday Empowerment to Shamanic Life. And this is my 10th book, so you can read about other books that I've read and CD programs that I have, and it's all on that site. So thank you, Jeanette. Well, I love talking to you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you with us. You know, I always like to share little tidbits because I think, you know, so many people, as I have myself, you know, I hear the words and I'm going, oh, that's not it. And then I'll say, well, maybe that's it. Well, you know, maybe I can make it this. So I think it's always the way we hear so many different people talk about their path in different words. And eventually, you know, it will come forth what you need.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much and have a great day. And perhaps you can come on again maybe in the fall. So thank you.
Thanks, Jeanette. Thanks for being a light in the world.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandra. And you as well. And if you'd like to find out more information about Sandra Engerman, her link to her website is on the bottom of today's show page. It'll go directly to her website, and you'll be able to find out more information there. Again, her book is Walking in Light, The Everyday Empowerment of a Shamanic Light. I will tell you, the book definitely, as I have said, you know, I got stuck in some spots. And it's okay to be stuck in some spots. Just keep reading on through. You know, read on through, read on through. I promise you it'll be okay when you get to the end. And then you can, as I've done, fold over the page, mark them down on the side and say maybe this, maybe that, maybe this, maybe not that. But, hey, you know, just go through it. Find what works for you. Pick out those little pieces and say it's going to be okay. And say, just take a chance, you know. Check out also Sandra's website. She has a lot of CDs on there. I myself have listened to them, and they're absolutely wonderful. So do check it out. So again, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. And please do check out our shows on archives. And have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone, or the television remote, or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.